All right. Before we speak to Professor Adam Haupt, who is at the Center for Film and Media Studies at UCT, let's just reflect on some of the commentary around the scandal around Liam Neeson.
From actor Liam Neeson's comments about race and revenge, the red carpet canceled at the premiere of his new movie after he spoke about those headlines and making comments here on GMA. And there's more on this. And so we have Lindsay Davis here now with us. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, Robin. Neeson, as you know, still feeling the blowback of his comments. While the New York movie premiere itself did go on as scheduled, the entertainment company Lionsgate scrapped the pomp and circumstance of the red carpet, all because of this ongoing controversy.
Just hours after appearing here on GMA, red carpet interviews and photo ops for Liam Neeson's latest movie canceled.
I'd never felt this feeling before, which was a primal urge to lash out.
The fallout fueled by Neeson's comments about race.
Sometimes just scratch the surface and you discover this racism and bigotry, and it's there.
The backlash comes after the actor recounted a story from 40 years ago in which he says he sought to carry out revenge after a close friend told him she was raped by a black man. He first shared the story in an interview with the British newspaper The Independent while promoting his latest film.
I went up and down areas with a cosh, hoping some black would come out of a pub and have a go at me about something, you know, so that I could kill him. I went out deliberately into black areas in the city looking to be set upon so that I could unleash physical violence.
Would you have had the same reaction if your friend had said it was a white man? Would you want her to go out
definitely.
And kill?
If she'd have said an Irish or a Scot or a Brit mm-hmm. or a Lithuanian, I know I would have had the same effect.
You're admitting that it was wrong. You've learned from that. But you have to also understand the pain of a black person hearing what you said.
Absolutely. That. You're absolutely right.
The controversy sparking a heated debate. Piers Morgan tweeting, Liam Neeson doesn't deserve a medal for admitting he was a murderous racist. He deserves severe condemnation. Another user saying Neeson apologized, adding, it's time for us to help him out by forgiving.
I'm not sure if he's so remorseful of telling the story or of the actual action of wanting to exact revenge, exact violence on a black person.
What I can understand is how you would go out and seek a random person of the same race mm-hmm. to harm.
That's
because that, for me, feels like a modern day lynching.
We appreciate that he said something really real. And he wants the United States of America to face what we won't discuss.
And Neeson saying that he is not a racist, that he did seek help at the time from a priest and also from friends. Online, there was a lot of commentary about black audience members on Live with Kelly and Ryan who embraced Neeson appearing to show support for the actor. But clearly this controversy not going away anytime soon.
Well, it all depends on the lens that you look through and your lens being your life perspective, your life experiences. And he did admit that, you know, that was wrong. And also recognizing what Sonny Hostin said on The View yesterday, I thought was spot on. And that's the feeling a lot of people, a lot of black people had when he made that comment.
And it was important that you talked about the hurt that then puts on people.
Regardless, very cringeworthy comments that are made. And I thought yesterday you handled it really well.
I appreciate that very much. And I really feel that I understand when you're angry because something has happened to a loved one. We get that. And you want that person who did it, not the race of that person.
But random.
That, right. So that is revenge going for the person who actually committed the heinous crime. But going beyond that, that's something totally different.
Though he has said, look, I realize it was awful.
Sure
and
did.
So I do think that we should give that a little
absolutely.
Credence.
That's right. And he did not have to speak with us yesterday.
No.
He could have canceled, and he did show up. So
showed up and did it.
Yep.
All right. Thanks,
you,
Lindsay. Thank you, Lindsay.
That's some of the conversation that is unfolding in America in the issue pertaining to Liam Neeson. Now, Professor Adam Haupt is the Center for Film and Media Studies at UCT, Associate Professor. I don't really want to focus, I suppose, on the detail pertaining to Liam Neeson. I'm happy for people to make up their minds one way or the other. I thought we'd broaden the conversation to really a slightly more, I suppose, difficult question of whether or not one can separate the art from the artist. Here I'm bringing in R. Kelly. Surviving R. Kelly is a documentary that is being flighted on DSTV as we speak over the next 6 weeks, where really allegation of just heinous crime in his perpetually chasing and abusing, quite frankly, young girl children. Disgusting. And yet there seems to be a spike in the streaming of his music. You think of Michael Jackson, for example. There's a documentary that was flighted or shown at the Sundance Film Festival a couple of weeks ago that the estate has responded to, but I imagine if you were to track Michael Jackson's music, there probably is a bit more attention paid to it than before. I was watching House of Cards season one. Kevin Spacey is amazing in it, and yet Kevin Spacey is involved and embroiled in a scandal of his own. Is it possible to separate the art from the artist, I wonder? Good morning.
Good morning, Africa. Thanks for inviting me. Good to be on your show. Quick answer, no, you can't. You know, art plays a particular function in people's lives. You know, sort of media forms that we have in this digitized world has ensured that that media, you know, previously mass media and our social media, you know, that they are key sites of socialization. They're more influential than educational institutions or religious institutions, which is why they were... It was such a moral panic in the 80s about the influence of TV, the influence of music on young minds, because adults, conservative gatekeepers realized that they were losing a significant amount of power over the way in which young people are socialized. And so that can be a good thing and a bad thing in the context of apartheid, where the apartheid state sought to control all sites of socialization to ensure that people don't rise up against apartheid and patriarchy generally. This is a good thing, but, you know, when you have, commercial imperatives shaping what happens and those commercial imperatives override ethical concerns, then you have a problem. And so, if an artist is abusing, often he is platform, often a male artist, the instances that you mentioned, that all male figures, if you're abusing your platform to advance your own narrow interests and to violate trust in you, public trust in you, then you occupy a similar position as an elected official, a civil servant, a politician. People place a certain amount of trust in you. They think you're wonderful. In this case, you're special because you're incredibly talented. Your music plays an important role in people's lives, especially young people's lives. People feel affirmed, especially if it's a black artist like Michael Jackson. You have young people looking up to this black figure in a context which is incredibly racist. And so having, talented artists with large media profiles challenging racist stereotypes, this is powerful. If you have that kind of profile and you're abusing that trust to advance, in this case, pedophilic, interests, which is illegal. It's a constitutional, problem, human rights abuse. If you're doing that, then you should answer it. And, the question about whether artists, the kind of controversy that surrounds certain artists that generates interest in the work and they continue to make money from it, that is where the issue of commercial imperative shaping media agendas is something that needs to be interrogated. We need to unpack that, especially in instances where it is clear somebody has committed a crime. Should you be allowed to continue to profit from that crime, the proceeds of that crime, or the controversy related to those crimes? The answer is no, it's a problem. And we need media operates in that regard.
Except though, Adam, and I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Mm-hmm. When R. Kelly was recording the music and the hits that he was recording, mm-hmm. at that moment he wasn't committing a crime. He might have been committing it post the recording session in the studio when Bill Cosby was filming that incredible series that really was a game changer in American mm-hmm. television and picking up all those Emmy Awards and the accolades that he was mm-hmm. picking growing up. Yes, once the cameras shut down, he was doing all these heinous things that make him a monster that he is. But does that... Because I suppose the other extreme for me is somebody like Mel Gibson, right? He was a pariah of Hollywood at some point, and clearly he's done something, or people have forgotten about the things that he's done, because now he's getting back into Hollywood fame. That I have a problem with. But can't I go to some of, you know, Mel Gibson, Bill Cosby, R. Kelly's past recordings and films and enjoy them for the genius that they were at the time before I knew that they were responsible for such heinous acts?
Well, R. Kelly is interesting because there are clues in R. Kelly's music. I mean, I remember being a young person being horrified. I didn't know about, you know, this is before Aaliyah and all of the other stuff was circulating. His music contains clues about his gender politics. And so for those of us who were analyzing pop culture, who were, you know, we were taking apart music, I was writing essays about it. I was, you know, someone who was studying media and culture generally. I would use his music in my tutorials in, you know, when I was used to tutor English Lit and then later on media studies. He was one of the examples that I would use to unpack how sexism operates in the media, how dodgy his music videos are visually, how a particular set of sexist ideas are signified, and lyrically what's going on. His music contained clues about his abusive politics. Other artists, it's not so clear what they're, you know, doing on stage or in frame doesn't necessarily relate to what they do when no one's looking. But he's sort of a special case. I think he's been operating in plain view. It's kind of a Donald Trump scenario. You know, engage in a set of truly questionable activities in plain view, and you get away with it. And so that's what R. Kelly has been doing. I'm not saying, just broadly to answer your question more broadly, I'm not saying that we should stop paying attention to the work of these artists. My question is, should artists continue to profit from the interest generated in their work? And those are two different things. If you already have this artist's music, or, you know, however you get it, doesn't mean you should automatically start a book burning, you know, exercise, like you saw with artists who, for example, have taken a stand against human rights abuses, and then, you know, let's just say someone speaking out in Palestine, and then right-wing conservatives in the States decide to burn your albums or your books. You do need to think about freedom of speech, artistic freedom, etc. But the issue of profiting commercially from controversy, and that is a problem, I think, and that, you know, we need to think about media outlets' complicity potentially in that problem.
For sure. I'm getting mixed reactions from listeners. There's somebody who says, I won't stop watching Kevin Spacey movies because then I'm boycotting other actors who are also part of that project, and it's not fair to them. Somebody saying, if you support these artists and you support them financially, you know, that's what you're doing if you keep listening to their music and watching their films. And I suppose my parting question is then, is it ever black and white, or is it shades of gray effectively? Because I respond more, I suppose, intimately to the utterings by Liam Neeson than Simon Gear would, because he would never be on the receiving end. And for me, I'm thinking, I could have been a victim. If I was around 30 years ago when he was ready to shoot a black person because they'd raped a female friend of theirs, I could have been that person. So therefore, of course, I'm going to feel it more than what Simon Gear would feel. I am completely abhorred by pedophilia. So I will never listen to another R. Kelly song. I will never dance to another R. Kelly song. But Kevin Spacey is such a good actor. And when I watch him on House of Cards, The Usual Suspects, American Dream, really, the skill of acting is lovely.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know what this reminds me of? Roseanne. Her show, what, you know, the actress who plays a daughter is instrumental in activating a reboot of the series. And Roseanne has been, you know, a card-carrying racist. She can't control herself. She goes off and says a set of things that are unacceptable, that entire show gets tanked in the end, and all of the people who were looking forward to a season or two, a decent run of employment, they get hurt. Not, I mean, so who's guilty? Is Roseanne guilty for acting recklessly and you know, taking a set of positions publicly that are basically bigoted? Does she take responsibility for that show reboot, the reboot of a show tanking, or the network that says, you know, this is actually difficult now, we must pull the plug? She needs to take responsibility. The same with Kevin Spacey. His predatory behavior is unacceptable. He's used his public profile to abuse people. And, you know, celebrity is a powerful drug. People don't feel that they can speak up against celebrities, especially if you're part of the network and you're young and hopeful, hoping to make your name. Now, put that scenario in a work context in media. Or, no, let's put it in the university context. Let's say I'm a hot scholar. People think that the stuff that I do is amazing, let's just say. And you've got these young hopefuls working at the university, and I use that, you know, profile that I have to abuse young hopefuls, et cetera, et cetera. And people feel that they can't speak up because I'm this brilliant scholar, I'm doing amazing work, but I'm abusive, right? What would you do? There are protocols in place for dealing with abusive colleagues, abusive leaders, et cetera, et cetera. Why would celebrities be different? No matter how brilliant you are, if you are doing things that hurt people, that hurt colleagues, that hurt a project you might be working on, whether it's a film or some funded research project, if you are abusing people, if you are committing a crime, that is a problem. Why would you be exempted? You know, regardless of how brilliant you are. I know many, actually, you know, the scenario that I'm throwing at you is not far-fetched. I've known of brilliant scholars who've been incredibly dodgy and manipulative and abusive, and they needed to be called out. Some of them got away with it because they are brilliant, powerful people. And the political climate now is people feel that they can speak out. No matter how powerful you are, you must answer for what you do. Everyone's accountable. There are no exceptions.
Adam, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for those insights. A very, very important conversation. Professor Adam Haupt, at the Center for Film and Media Studies at the University of Cape Town.